So we're super excited. It's the first episode of our Back in My Day podcast with our first guest, Richard. Richard has the most fascinating story to tell about his life and the obstacles that he's overcome. We really hope you enjoy it. Please do subscribe to our podcast so you can listen to future episodes as we release them. But yes, we really hope you enjoy listening to Richard.
When I found out that I was when, why did you give me away and not him?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, to never get that sort of understanding of why that happened must be...
The only one I could assume is I'm the ugly one.
You both look exactly the same.
Well, I don't know. Well, it's right, it's identical. It's been confusing for me all night.
Thanks, Richard, for coming on our podcast and having a chat. Really appreciate it. So, like with everyone, we'd just like to start at the beginning, if that's okay, and just ask a bit about where you were born in the early years.
Well, I was born in Chesterfield, in England,
yeah,
1953.
Yeah,
we don't tell anybody. and I was given away at birth. I didn't realise until many years later that I had a twin brother.
Oh well.
And I was born on the 2 minutes to midnight on the 31st of December, and my twin brother was born 3 minutes later, which means I'm a year older than he is. And yet we're twins.
Yeah, wow. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Which is cause of, with Centrelink, et cetera, is cause of a few problems.
Yeah, I can understand.
Over the years. Yeah, that was 1953. Yeah, and I was given away at birth.
Yeah.
David, that was my twin brother, he wasn't.
Wow.
And I ended up in an orphanage in Liverpool, in England. And from there, I spent 10 years. And as they did in those days in England, they deported me and about 100 other kids.
I did not know that was a thing. I didn't know that kids...
There's been documentaries made about it.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I've been interviewed before. I did interview for that.
Right.
And wanted to know what happened to us, etc.
Yeah.
And I think there's 32 other kids. We were sent to Southampton in England. And then I was sent to Liverpool, and we put on a boat and sent to Australia.
Can you remember all of that? Do you remember everything from that age?
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, I can remember quite clearly because it was rather traumatic.
Well, yeah, I can imagine.
I came to Australia, and I was put into an orphanage here in Brisbane, where we were mistreated pretty badly, and it was after a period of time, I was about 11 then, and I ran away, took off, went into the bush. I was in the bush about 3 days.
At 11 years old?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in the bush, had all the authorities looking for me, apparently, and I evaded them thanks to some Aborigines who found me. They found me in the bush, and it's north of Brisbane, a place called Burpengary. I told them my story, and they weren't in particular wrapped in white authority themselves. So they hid me on their mission, Wundurimba Mission, and I stayed there until I was 17.
To your how old, sir?
I stayed there until I was 17.
Wow. Well, what a story.
Basically hiding. I can speak Yoruba and Bunyurong, mainly because my lady, I call them my mother.
So they effectively became your family, your mum?
My mother, Annie Rita, I call her. She was Bunjalung, so I learned her language because they spoke that in the house. And the father, Uncle Paul, he was Yoruba language. So I learned that too over the years.
Wow.
I believe I'm the only white man in the world that can do it.
Yeah, that's amazing. To think you're a twin born in Chesterfield and ended up living in the, with Aboriginal family in Brisbane.
I lived with the Aboriginals until I was 17, 18, and I knew the authorities couldn't do anything to me at that stage because, I was 18 and a legal adult, even though it wasn't then, it was 21.
Yeah.
But in my day, it was, I took over at 18 from the Aboriginals. I know at school, as most Aboriginals don't, in on the missions, and I was really just like an Aborigine. I can skin a kangaroo. Oh. You see, what should you grab? Anything like that. You know, I sort of do anything. I can survive in the bush.
Was that a much happier time of your life after being in the orphanage?
And yeah, it was. Oh, yeah.
So you found happiness by being taken in by the family?
Badly in the orphanage. That's why we ran away.
Right.
Yeah, after living with the Aborigines, I thought I'd decided to get myself an education. Ooh. I was 18, 19 at that time. So I packed basically 10 years of education, state school, high school.
Yeah.
Did learn about him in England.
So when you were at the orphanage, was it sort of like schooling there? Was there education at the
in orphanage? Australia? Sort of. Wasn't there, not really.
Right.
And in those days, on daylight saving time, as they said, Queensland was like 50 years and 1 hour behind. I became an architect. I'm an architect by profession.
Even that, to have that life you'd led up to then, and then to put yourself in, the education to become an architect.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I was determined to get myself an education.
Hmm.
And after I did, I found out that I was pretty smart.
Yeah, great.
And so I kept going. I worked, and then I didn't attain my architectural degree until about 10 years later.
Right.
And I worked.
So worked as an architect, and then working with the government. Hmm. So what kind of things were you working on?
Boring things.
Oh, right.
Pavements, guttering.
Right.
Underground sewerage systems, things like that.
Yeah.
But I was really a creative person,
yeah.
Such, and I left all that behind.
Yeah.
And I started to travel. Well, I've always wanted to go and find my parents, find out who the hell I was.
I was going to ask you if you were happy to talk about it. You went and found your family?
Yeah, I hitchhiked back to England.
Yeah.
I didn't have the money. Well, sort of, but I thought it would be an adventure.
So how old were you then when you made that trip back?
27. And I got a plane to Singapore and then went up through the Penang Peninsula and kept going. It took me years, 3-4 years. I was jailed in Israel.
I saw this written down. I was looking forward to asking about that. Yeah, yeah. What happened there?
Well, I ended up there during one of their wars. I got robbed in Jordan.
Yeah.
And they took my ID. I had no ID. I was picked up by the Israeli police as I was going through Israel.
And but you had no identification?
No ID, so they jailed me.
Wow.
They put me in like the kibbutzi thing, they called it.
Yeah, what was that like?
I wasn't allowed to leave. I was pretty good at running away from things. And I got out of there.
Oh, you escaped?
Yeah. I got out of there, just took off. I didn't know where I was going. I ended up in the desert.
So this is what you'd learned from your earlier days, escaping from orphanages, and you used it later in life.
I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I ended up back in England. And I knew I was born in Chesterfield. So I thought, well, I'll go to Chesterfield. I was in London. Because I flew from Paris to London, the final stage. And I was in London, went to Chesterfield, got a train up to Chesterfield, and I got off the station. Chesterfield Station, I saw a pub across the road. I thought, hey, I can have a beer or something, I can have something to eat. And I walked into the pub, and this guy walked to the bar. This guy said to me, beyond the bar, he said to me, why aren't you at work today? And I looked at him, what are you doing to me, you know?
Hmm.
He talked to me like he knew me. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean, you know. He said, you'll get the sack again, David.
Are you not going to say you look exactly like your twin brother?
And I didn't know. And I told him, my name's not David, I said, my name's Richard. And he detected an Australian accent. And he looked at me and said, no, you're not David, are you? And I said, no, my name's Richard. Richard wow. Atkins.
Yeah.
He said, do you know, you must be his twin. He said, you've got to be. I said, well, so I was born, I told him the story, and I was there. Within half an hour, I had my identical twin brother standing next to me.
Wow.
Nobody in the pub could tell us apart.
That's amazing. So what was that first interaction like?
Yeah, it's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say to him. I was sort of like gobsmacked, you know.
He knew about you?
No.
Oh, he didn't?
He didn't know about me either.
So that day he found out there's another person.
And the only way he could believe that I was, he thought I was an Aussie con man or something.
Yeah.
And he thought the only reason he knew is because we were identical.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to...
He said, the only reason I know that dummy is like that. He's dead now, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh.
And he said to me, he said, the only reason I knew that day is because I just looked at you and knew you were.
Yeah.
You know. But he's the older brother.
Yeah, the older, yeah, yeah. And then did you rekindle with other family members?
Yeah, I met my aunties. He took me around, you know, we went around the place, I stayed at his place, and I met aunties and uncles and things.
Yeah.
And I had a sister, Valerie.
Right.
An older sister. And an older brother who was my half-brother, because apparently he was married to one.
Yeah.
And he was in the English Army. He served in the Falklands, etc. and places.
Yeah.
All these people passed on now. I think I'm the only one left.
Were your parents still alive?
No. Right. I never met my mum and dad.
No. Right.
Never did. So I never met. So I never asked them, because the main reason it's always bugging on my life. When I found out that I was, and it still bugs me, when I found out that I was twin, why did you give me away and not him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, to never get that sort of understanding of why that happened must be
the only thing I could assume is I'm the ugly one.
You both look exactly the same.
Well, I don't know. Well, it's right, it's identical. It's been confusing for me all my life. You know?
Surely it has to do with, oh, look, who knows? I mean, maybe because you're twins. I think we know people have twins, and it's very, very hard to, you know, I think some people expect to have one baby and then two come along.
Yeah,
you wonder if it's...
It'll go to my grave with me as a birth
son. Yeah, it's a shame you'll never get the answers for that.
Yeah.
So did you end up spending much time in the UK?
Too cold for me, mate.
Too cold?
Yeah. No, I was still used to Aussie weather. It was all right. I like the English football.
Yeah. Do you follow a team?
Yeah, apart from Spurs.
I'm an Arsenal fan.
Oh, yeah.
Biggest rivals.
That's just down the road, yeah.
Yeah.
White Hart Lane. Well, they're not there anymore. They've moved, of course.
Yeah.
They've got a new stadium.
Do you get to a game?
Many.
Oh, good.
That's the only thing I liked about England. That's what I was looking
against the football.
Yeah,
it's a great atmosphere, isn't it, those
games?
Yeah,
it is. I still watch it on TV.
But it starts again this Saturday.
Yeah, 2 o'clock Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I wait up for it. It's on the SBS sometimes.
What were those 6 days like in that Israeli jail?
Yeah, bread and water.
Pretty bad. Yeah.
They interrogated me because I thought I was a spy.
Wow.
Because of my no papers, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And I'm on a chair, similar to this chair I'm sitting in, no, probably not as comfortable, in the middle of a room, and I was given the old 1-2. You know, one guy there.
Yeah.
And asking the same questions over and over. Which I didn't know the answer to, so I couldn't really say, because I wasn't a spy.
What do you think would have happened if you hadn't escaped?
I would still be there. Well, probably wouldn't be living. But they weren't going to let me go. They treated me like rubbish.
Yes. Well, yeah, good that you were accomplished escape artist, yeah.
Yeah. I've never been to jail, so I've never got out of a real one.
Well, yeah, yeah. In terms of hobbies and interests, it says that you still draw?
I do drawings, yeah, which I've had a lot sold over the years. I've hung in Gallery Queensland.
Cool.
Yeah, I love drawing. That's basically what I do. I mean,
okay.
All the time.
Well, why did you come to Sydney?
My health. I was living in Brisbane and I became very ill. And they couldn't figure out what it was. What was it? They figured out what it was. I needed a transplant, a liver transplant.
Right.
And I was in Brisbane. One became available in Sydney. So I was thrown onto a helicopter and flown to Westmead Hospital. And I landed straight on the roof.
Yeah.
Straight into the surgery.
Wow.
And I had ongoing appointments, etc. after I got out of hospital.
Oh.
And so I never bothered even going back to Brisbane. Yeah. I stayed in Sydney for the rest of my life. Now I'll do those things.
Do you still stay in touch with your Aboriginal family?
No. My son's Aboriginal. Oh. Because I didn't marry her. She had a baby, Matthew. He's now 34, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. But I've never kept in contact with him.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
City.
Yeah.
I don't go back north. I don't go back to this morning. They live in this morning.
Yeah.
And I haven't been back up that way since coming to Sydney.
Right, okay. And how long have you lived at Uniting at Springwood?
Here, 10 months.
Yeah. And how's that been? How's the transition coming into here?
Yeah, well, I've lived alone. From the illnesses I had, and I was in Westmead Hospital, Uniting, like a social worker, used to visit the wards.
Right.
And they got to know me because of the same person that visited. And I was in there a long time. Got to know about my story, blah, blah, blah. And I had no work. When it was time for me to be discharged, I think it was like 3 months. When it's time for me to be discharged, they helped me find a house, blah, 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 Uniting did. And and they used to visit me at home twice a week. I got to know them really well. And it got to a stage where I couldn't live at home by myself anymore. They suggested this place. And I said, why not? Yeah, so I came here 10 months ago.
So how's it been?
Slow.
Excuse me. Slow?
I'm the youngest one here.
Right, okay.
It can be a little bit. I feel like a square peg in a round hole.
Right. Yeah,
sometimes. Yeah. Because a lot of these people don't know what I'm talking about. About anything else, blah, 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 but just general, a lot of them, well, can't converse, don't converse.
Yeah.
There's all this synology.
Do you still get out once? Do you go?
I get out once a week when the bus takes me out.
You got to go on the trips, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You got to shopping.
Yeah.
What day is the day? Thursday, went yesterday.
Right, okay.
Mm. Yeah. That's when I buy my, whatever I want to buy.
Yeah.
Come on, but what takes 2 hours? I'd like to get a lot more, but because of no family, none of this, blah, 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 no friends in Sydney, I don't get visits. Well, because I did notice here that I don't get visits. And he said, we've noticed you don't get visitors, Richard. So I told him about my situation.
Mm.
And, so Uniting have organised somebody to visit me.
Okay.
They visit me twice a week.
Yeah.
They take me out. And I've got really quite friendly with the person.
Yeah, that's good.
They've been doing it now, not only here, but they were doing it while I was home in Wentworth Hill in Sydney, where I used to live.
Mm.
And they've got to know me quite a bit. Yeah. Same people come visit me.
Yeah, that's good. Did it take a long time to sort of get into their way of life, or was it?
Yeah, it was hard. They used to call me a gub original. Right. A gubba is an Aboriginal for white man.
Right.
So white people and Aboriginals just call me a gubba original.
Aboriginal.
Because I acted like a black man.
Yeah.
But I would look white.
Yeah.
But speaking their lingo and all that, you know, this thing, you know, calling gubba original.
Yeah.
That's what they call me.
Yeah.
I'd like to go. I call it home. I'd like to go home. But I can't see me doing it.
Have you stayed in touch with your brother?
No, he passed away.
Oh, sorry. Did you stay in touch after you found each other?
Yeah. Yeah. My sister passed away as well. There's only me left now. Yeah. That I know I've got, I should imagine I've got cousins and stuff like that in England. Never kept in contact with them.
Yeah, very hard to stay in touch with those relatives when you move to another country. It's the same.
Especially over the years.
Mm.
You may stay in touch initially, but after a while,
it just gets harder and harder, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Pre-internet days.
What about all of the history and the character and stuff? I always like that.
Yeah, because I visited a lot of homes while I was in, like, castles around where I was born in Derbyshire. A lot of beautiful countryside, and castles, Hardacore, and all those sort of places. And I visited all those places.
Yeah.
I remembered them at school, when I was at school in England as a kid. And I visited all those sort of places, did the London, did the touristy thing.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I found about Australia, it hasn't got anything like that.
No.
nothing past 250 years old, really.
Yeah.
That's why I like the Aboriginal culture. It's amazing.
Yeah, because they have got that history. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
30,000 years of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I have been called in on a couple of occasions by police once when they wanted to, they were interrogating, questioning a Koori Aboriginal fellow. And he couldn't speak very good English. And he was Bunjalung. And the police knew about me, so they called me in and they wanted me to translate.
Yeah, translator. Yeah.
Between English and black man.
Which, like you said, that's not a very, there's not many people can do that.
No. That's why they call me a good original, I think. Yeah, it's always been a bit interesting, but since I've come down here, it's been, yeah, I wish I hadn't lost contact, but everybody keeps saying to me, you should write a book, you know, you should write a book.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, why not?
And I wouldn't have the intelligence to sit and write it.
You don't know until you try it. Why not start it and see you get on?
Well, I did. I started it a couple of years ago when I was in Wentworthville.
Mm.
And one of the support workers who used to come out to visit me from Uniting, I told him about it. She said, can I read it? And I'd only done about 40 pages. She took it away to read and have it typed up. Never saw it again.
Oh.
And I've asked. And here, and I've asked when they used to keep visiting me, can I have my manuscript back or this sort of thing? And it never came back, unfortunately. And as far as somebody knows, everybody knows there, is that it was put in the drawers, in the pile, and it's never been seen again.
That's frustrating.
Nobody can find it. And I never bother doing it again.
Well, I hope you pick it up again. I'll certainly buy the book if it gets to there.
Yeah. What should I call it?
Cup original.
Yeah, go original, but go on. But I don't think I'll do it. I've got plenty of time here, though. But I do mainly drawing.
Yeah,
that's about it. Could write a book about this place.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on and having a chat. It's a great, great story. Can I ask you one more question that we ask everyone when they come on?
Mm.
If you could go back in time and speak to your young self, say 16, any advice that you'd give yourself?
Do the same thing.
Do the same thing, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because a lot of the things I wasn't able to determine. I've had some bad things happen in my jail and all that sort of stuff, but in Israel, but I don't regret anything. I don't regret anything.
Yeah. Overall, you enjoyed your life and you've done a lot.
I call this place the place that comes where people come to die.
Yeah.
And they don't like me when I say that. But in fact, it really is.
Yeah.
And I'm here. Yeah, thanks very much.
No, thanks so much for coming for a chat. It's been great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.